Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 46, recorded Friday, October 6th, 2006. This is the podcast given the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: long-distance guilt, and classic travel stories overheard in a bar. This week, coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago on what has been a tough couple of weeks of travel. Last week's pass through the West Coast was an exercise in sleep deprivation therapy, flying out late, an early morning phone call from folks 2 hours ahead of me, a red eye back home. I tell you, I knew I had hit the wall at 10 p.m. Friday night in LAX. I was sitting at the gate reading the newspaper, and I woke up with a jolt to the sound of the paper hitting the floor. After that, I just struggled to stay awake, afraid that I'd sleep through the boarding call. And then this week's triangulation was a long one, too. Chicago to San Francisco to Boston in 3 days. Only made more fun when huge thunderstorms stacked up O'Hare on both my departure and return dates. United then dogpiled the fun by canceling my 2 p.m. flight home, pushing me onto the 3:30 p.m. from Boston, and then delaying that so it didn't arrive until just before my 6 p.m. Chicago appointment, some 30 minutes away. And then, just for the cherry on top, I hit a traffic jam driving out of O'Hare. 10 minutes to drive what is normally a 90-second run from the parking garage to the Tri-State Tollway. Tough to maintain a positive mental attitude about travel when you're thinking it's a lousy week and it's only Wednesday. Like I said, it's been a grinding 2 weeks, but there is a break in sight. I leave Saturday for a 4-day London vacation with my mother and daughter, and since it's a quick jaunt, sleep on the way over is important, so we'll be flying British Air Club World. My daughter will get a kick out of the lie-flat seats, and I'll get some good sleep after a drink or two, or three, to take the edge off from this week. Lots of follow-up. In the previous Travel Commons podcast, I talked about TSA screeners trying to take away my Echodent tooth powder because they assume it's toothpaste. I had it happen to me twice this week, once again at O'Hare and then in Boston's Logan Airport. I know when it's going to happen. I can see the screener reverse the conveyor belt a couple of times, wave over a colleague to look at the screen, and then send them over to grab my bag. They go straight for the toiletry bag. At O'Hare, the guy put my tooth powder aside, repacked everything, and then said, kind of apologetically, "Sorry, you can't take this on." "Why not?" I asked. "It's tooth powder." The guy picked it up again, read the label this time, and looked at me with a surprised smile. "Wow, I've never heard of that before," and then started quizzing me about how I use it and how it tastes. And in Boston, as the guy was repacking my kit, he said, "Well, here you go. Next time, pull out all the liquids," pointing to the tooth powder bottle. "It's tooth powder," I said again. He looked at the label. He said, "Wow, sorry about that. I've been up since 4 a.m. Well, Echodent needs to target some product awareness marketing at the TSA screeners, I think, or at least print the word powder in larger type. Continuing on Travel Commons 45's toiletries thread, I found some solid hair product that has passed TSA inspections in O'Hare, San Francisco, Boston, and the hands-on inspections there. What is it? It's from Giovanni Organic Hair Care, and it's called Glamtrax Styling Stick Wax. I tell you, it seems to pass the TSA's stringent solids test that I described in my earlier Debating States of Matter blog post. And of course, being that solid, it's a bit more challenging to apply, kind of like applying stick deodorant to your head. But I'm looking neater than I did a couple of weeks ago. Okay, so why this continued focus on solid-state toiletries when the TSA has relaxed their no-liquids rule? Well, at least for me, it's easier to stay solid than it is to pull out yet another piece of my kit for examination and then remember to retrieve it at the other end. I mean, as it is, I'm already pulling out my laptop, taking off my jacket, pulling off my shoes, and then I have to remember to pick everything up amid sort of the gray container traffic jam being spit out of the x-ray machine. And remember, I mean, frequent travelers do the same things again and again, so we're all about efficiency. And for me, having full-sized, solid travel toiletries, try saying that three times fast, it eliminates two hassles. One, running out to Target every week to replenish the 3-ounce travel-size bottles of everything, and then, like I said, at the screening post, having to pull out and repack that quart-sized Ziploc bag every time I get screened. Yeah, the need to repurchase toiletries reminded me of a comment that was posted on Travel Commons number 28, which was at the beginning of the year, way before the no liquids ban. I talked about in that podcast having to restock my kit after forgetting it at home. The comment was, when traveling abroad, I now look forward to checking out the local pharmacies in other countries, finding a new type of toothpaste in Paris, soap in London, Borotalco powder in Florence, or almost anything in Tokyo. Actually, it provides more lasting memories than you'd initially think. The process of shopping and purchasing gets you out into the city, provides at least a glimpse of the culture of your destination, and the new products can sometimes end up being instant favorites. Over the past month, I think a lot of folks have had the opportunity to get familiar with their local pharmacies. Chris Chufo sent me a link to a funny article in The Onion about George Bush missing an Air Force One flight. I got a good chuckle out of it. Thanks, Chris. I checked the show notes for the link, but I'll tell you, it'll generate a knowing smile for most frequent travelers. While out in California last week, I flew down to Ontario, California, and attended the first day of the Podcast Expo. It was an interesting blend of business types wearing blue blazers and open collar shirts, and the hardcore geek crowd with, you know, either long hair or shaved heads. You know, nothing in the middle there? Beer bellies, tattoos, and body piercings. But having said that, everybody played well with each other. I enjoyed the opportunity to meet Travel Commons contributors such as Ed Vauder and Chris Christensen, he of the Amateur Travelers podcast. When Chris would introduce me to people, he would say, Mark's podcast is about the dark side of travel. Travel because you have to. Mine is the happy side of travel. It worked pretty well, actually. Also, I had a chance to chat with Alan Levy, who does the Geography for Travelers podcast. Alan's day job is teaching at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, and we had an interesting conversation about some of his research in Hong Kong. But what really struck me was Alan told me that he was on a Skype call with a colleague in New Zealand who, when Alan told him he was going to the Podcast Expo, asked, will you see Mark Peacock there? Well, I'll tell you, that just blew me away that somebody halfway around the world, and I know it happens, but I mean, you know it mentally in your head, but still, people sort of halfway around the world are listening to my rambles. And I'll tell you, though, it's great. It blows me away, and it's the kind of thing that sort of keeps me doing this podcast. Which leads me to thank the folks who pushed in new Frapper pins since the last podcast. Travel Commons contributors Jess Green and Udayan Tripathi showed up, as well as a couple folks from New Zealand. Also, Alec from L.A. and Lori from Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for the kind notes on your pins. If you want to join the fun, click on the Frapper badge on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website. And thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories. Voice of the Traveler. The email address is comments@travelcommons.com, or you can post your comments at the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is long-distance guilt. As I mentioned earlier, this was a hell of a week. Monday night, leaving O'Hare, Thunderstorms threatened all afternoon. My flight to San Francisco got out just before the storm line hit and closed the airport. I felt lucky I had gotten out. Lucky, that is, until I hit the ground in San Francisco and I lit up my mobile phone and checked the messages as we taxied to the terminal. I listened to my wife cry in frustration as rainwater flooded into our basement. She needed help, and I was 2,000 miles and a four-hour flight in the wrong direction. If you're a frequent traveler, this is going to happen to you, if for no other reason than just sort of brute force probability. If you're out of town 40 to 50% of the time, something bad is going to happen when you're away. I was telling my basement story to a colleague this week, and he told me he'd gotten a call from his wife earlier that day saying that that water was pouring out of their dining room chandelier. Now, some folks look at you with a knowing smile and call you lucky, which of course just piles on the guilt even more. You already feel guilty that your spouse bears the brunt of the home operations burden, and now you've piled on even more. In Travel Commons number 41, I mentioned that I was glad I was home during that water in the basement incident, happy to be hands-on fixing the problem. Because being on the receiving end of that mobile phone call, and it's a call that always seems to come when you're in the air or just walking into a meeting or sitting down to dinner, that call is more than just guilt-generating. It's frustrating. You'd like to have your hands on the wheel solving the problem, but instead, you're reduced to advising, coaching, consoling from afar. And you try to move from advising to directing at your own risk. Not being in the middle of the problem, you lose all rights to drive the solution. And the massive frustration, that bulk of frustration, yours at being on the sidelines, your spouse's, and having to do everything without you, can easily overwhelm the imperfect communication medium that is the phone call. And for us, for my wife and I, it was that next evening, Tuesday, I turned on my phone after landing in Boston, tired after a 5.5 hour flight from San Francisco in a center seat, and got a voice message from my wife talking about just how bad the cleanup was going. I probably should have paused before returning the call, but I didn't. That phone call did not improve the situation for either of us. These tribulations, they do test us. They test our ability to listen, our ability to empathize, and our ability to maintain perspective. And these tests apply equally to both sides of the phone. In that struggle to maintain perspective, my wife and I have used that old saw, if this is the worst thing that ever happens to you, we've used that so many times, it's now become a joke. Sure to break the tension. Yeah, you're right. I could have been electrocuted when I picked up the still plugged in PC to drain the water out of it. And even with my delays getting back home from Boston, I was able to assuage just some small bit of guilt by making it home in time to haul the trash bags out to the curb for the pickup the next morning. Well, that and writing the check to ServiceMaster so that someone else had to do the cleanup. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is a new edition of Classic Travel Stories overheard in a bar. Well, all right. I may be stretching the definition of classic travel stories because these are relatively recent, but I still think they're fun. You know, back in Travel Commons number 23, I did a topic, Scenes from a Hotel Bar, about what was going on at 10:30 on a Wednesday night in the Memphis Marriott's Blue Shoes Bar. How come everything in Memphis has got to have that Elvis theme? Most frequent travelers spend some time on the road sitting in bars by themselves. Tuesday night, for me, after a lovely phone call from my wife, was pretty typical. I hit my hotel in Boston at about 10 p.m., again, after my lovely 5.5 hour flight from San Francisco. I wasn't desperate enough to shell out $5 for a United box lunch, but by the time I got to the hotel, I was a bit peckish. And the only thing still serving food was the Rock Bottom Brewery there. I was staying sort of in the theater district. not a problem. I got a bowl of chili, a nice cask-conditioned IPA, India Pale Ale, and three innings of the first game of the Tigers-Yankees playoff, complete with authentic Yankee Red Sox hate banter between the bartender and the guy sitting next to me in a Yankees shirt. Honestly, I'm not quite sure it could have gotten any better. I was kind of thinking the same thing a few months back when I was sitting at the bar of the Jack Falstaff restaurant near SBC Park in San Francisco. Or I guess, what is it now, AT&T Park? They've changed that name like three times in 5 years. Anyhow, I was drinking an Anchor Steam beer, waiting for some clients for dinner. There were a couple of late 50s, sort of early retirement baby boomers sitting next to me. The ball game was turned up a little loud, so I didn't catch the whole conversation. But the snippets that I did were just priceless. There's a point when you internalize whatever you're dealing with, boredom, whatever. I'm between investments right now. Well, I sold my hotel in the desert, but I'm staying there. I'm still staying there, working on my meditation. I mean, I got to tell you, with that last one, I had to look over and see if these guys were serious. I mean, this was just too much the stereotypical California conversation. But these guys were serious, or at least they were doing a good job of keeping a straight face, which was more than I could say for myself. Now, my second bar story is half a world away in Sweden during my vacation. And after a nice boat ride around the islands off of Filbacka, that's a resort town off the west coast of Sweden, and I'm sure that I got Swedish listeners cringing at that pronunciation. My daughter announced she wanted to go to Tammenstrand, some sort of resort water park that she'd found on the internet. It was just south of Grebbestad, not far from where we were, so we went and checked it out. And for all my Midwest listeners, it was sort of like a Swedish Wisconsin Dells, but without the cheese curds. We lucked out. Lucked out. They did not have a room for the night, but they did have a day pass for $25. So the kids changed into their swimsuits, and I headed for the bar. I was able to get a local brew called Granite, and didn't taste like rocks, but it tastes pretty good. So I was happy. I was just sitting there flipping through some tour books, planning out where I was going to, drive that new Saab convertible the next day. And, it sort of got kind of the earworm thing going, and I noticed that the bar band was playing American oldies, American Pie, City of New Orleans, Cotton Fields Back Home. Well, interesting choice, I thought. There we were, probably an hour from the Norwegian border. But I went back and kept flipping through my books. But then I looked up again and I noticed that everyone around me was singing along. Now, I feel pretty safe in saying that I was the only American in that bar in Tammenstrand. I mean, there were Norwegians, Danes, Germans, Swedes. They were all starting their summer holiday. And they were all starting it by singing along loudly in English to American songs, led, mind you, by a Swedish lounge singer wearing a 3-foot-tall white Afro fright wig. And here I was, the only guy who probably understood all the lyrics, just watching with amazement and then ordering another beer. I haven't completely parsed this anecdote for its meanings on the state of Euro-American relations in the shadow of the Iraqi war, but I'm sure it says something. I think it's the fright wig that's throwing me off. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 46. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The bridge music on today's show is from IODA PromoNet, from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance, IODA. Heaven by Electric Sky Church, One Foot Down by Peter Bradley Adams, and an early live version of Los Lonely Boys' Heaven. Check out the show notes for artist details and various assorted links. The website, IODA's website, is promonet.iodaalliance, or actually it's iodaalliance.com. It'll be easier, just check the show notes. If you've got a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, Voice of the Traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file, to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or post them on our website. at TrevilCommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails and audio file or post comments on the website. Thanks and take care until I talk to you next. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling, crying into the phone, within my heart you find